Before we begin, I wanted to give a huge shout out to the folks at Amazon Music for partnering with us on this episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. But more on this later. Right then, let's get right into today's episode. Welcome along, folks, to a very special episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. Now, to get into motorsport, there are three main verticals that you can normally go for. You can either be a competitor, a driver, a very costly and risky way of getting in, or you could be a media person as well, doing what the kind of stuff that me and Kunal tend to do as well, making a podcast, being on TV, coordinating the broadcasts, and writing for articles, journalists, and all the other stuff as well. That's two main routes. The third route is by getting into the engineering side of the field. And normally, we all talk about F1 Academy, right? We all talk about drivers being picked out from the grassroots of the sport and us creating a ladder for them to get into Formula One. But we never, ever talk about a ladder for engineers, because every single year, we've got hundreds and thousands of engineers working in the world of Formula One, setting up and creating these beautiful race cars that we see on track. And, funnily enough, there has been an F1 Academy of sorts running for the last 22 years. Folks, I am talking about F1 in schools. They've been running for the last two decades, creating lots and lots of engineers who can then work on ahead in Formula One, and they really find them at the grassroots level. We have Andrew Denford, the chairman of F1 in Schools, on the podcast here today, who has been the face and the man behind it all for all these years. Andrew, firstly, a very warm welcome to the Inside Line F1 podcast. What really drives you to do F1 in schools? Because it is, what, it's thousands of lives that you're touching every year, aren't you?
Yeah, we definitely are. I mean, we've been doing it for 23 years, and it was all really about addressing in the UK back in the day the shortage of engineers and school students wanted to come into engineering and manufacturing as a career. It wasn't seen as high tech, as clean, and parents weren't switched on with it. And so you've got to really start by engaging the parents and getting them there accepting this as a future career for their young children. So what better way than using the pinnacle of high performance engineering and motorsport, a Formula One, as the hook to get them engaged in wanting to become an engineer?
And Andrew, I'm so curious about this. We've all heard stories of F1 in schools. Now, for all of you folks who aren't quite aware, it's essentially a school team program that you have at a very grassroots level where people can compete and create small cars in itself. But the way you guys design things, that's quite different, isn't it, Andrew?
I mean, it was originally back into designing, making, racing. And that's as simple as it was back in 2000. Then we got into a partnership with Jaguar, who were just into Formula One at that point in time. That lasted 4 years. But we've expanded it then from design, make, race to project management, creating a business plan, a sponsorship and marketing plan, doing sketching. Well, first of all, forming a team. So you've got all team different disciplines. So you've got a team principal, an aerodynamicist, a manufacturing engineer, project manager, a marketing and sponsorship person who'll take that team forward to get funding to go to regional events. And then, of course, they've got to come along and once they've designed the car, analyze it. And we do that with ANSYS CFD software now. Then they manufacture it and race it down the track, which is done in just over a second. So there's so many different disciplines from the original concept of F1 in schools.
I find it so amazing, though. Like, how young are the children, really? I mean, we're talking about proper school kids, aren't we?
We start them as young as 8, 9 years of age. They can build a small paper car. You know, every F1 team has supported us and given their body shells, which is on our website. And you can design your own body shell and put it onto a paper chassis with small wheels that will shoot it down the track with a 4 gram compressed gas cylinder. And that gets them hooked at an early age with what we call the F1 in schools primary class. And that's a competitive thing, which happens. We've got about 15 regional finals in the UK, but we're operating that now in over 15 countries around the world. And then they go from that into what we call our entry class, then development, and of course the professional class, which is the one we use at our world finals.
Now, wait a minute. So they're going from 8 years old to roughly how old? How old are the oldest competitors, more or less?
19 years of age at the world finals. So we give them obviously a chance to do this in their final, if you like, A-level year. And then if they qualify at the national to get to the world finals, they may have turned 19. So 9 to 19 is our age span, really, with F1 in schools.
And I find it amazing that you're not just teaching the basics of engineering in a way, but also the project management side as well. Because when you go higher up in Formula One, essentially that's what it eventually tends to become, right? In the case of, I mean, even Mattia Binotto in Ferrari as well. He was a promising engineer, but then having to learn these things. But what's it like actually working with the kids, Andrew? Because they're all, I'm imagining, very passionate, but very raw as well.
Yeah, they're phenomenal. I mean, when you get to the world finals, the level of intelligence these students have, because, you know, obviously they've got to go through the whole process of, you know, designing and to manufacturing and to racing, but they've also got to deliver at the events verbal presentations. They've got three portfolios on project management, enterprise and engineering, and those are all judged as well. They've got to go through scrutineering, engineering judging. And of course, all of those are part of life skills that they pull together before they actually get to, you know, find out their results and if they've made it through to the regional, to the national, or to the world finals. So many, many skill sets they pick up on F1 in schools. We're seen as the biggest STEM competition, so science, technology, engineering, and maths. But we're giving all the life skills that companies out there need from students. So when they finish at school, they've got F1 in schools on their CV, companies look at them and know they're well-rounded and we've got all the attributes that companies need.
At just the age of 10 or 12 or 14, honestly, that sounds baffling. I mean, there's so much that eventually they could end up doing. But the cars, right? Now that's genuinely got me curious. When I initially heard of the concept, and there's so many other Formula student kind of categories around the world as well, where students have to build life-sized cars, but F1's in schools is a little bit different to that, isn't it? So what sort of cars are you guys actually getting them to build in a way?
Yeah, well, I mean, the software, we use Autodesk, you know, Fusion 360 to design the car. And the manufacturing is done on a CNC router. And it's basically made out of 3D model block. And they machine, machine the car. It's 20 centimeters long. But the rules and regulations are set by an international committee headed by Gary Anderson, who you may know. Was team principal at Jordan. He drives our team to challenge the students without over-challenging them. So they've got all the facets that, you know, and understanding what they've got to have before they produce this car. And then they've got to 3D print the front and rear wings. They've got to maybe make the wheel support structure, manufacture the wheels, source the correct bearings so that the car is going to be as fast and efficient as possible. So there's so many things they have to do. It's quite unreal, really. And we do want to make it easy, too, to enter. So the entry class is much simpler. Just a 3D design and make and manufacture the wings on the cars at the same time as you manufacture the car body. Put the wheels on, standard wheels, and race it at a regional final. But moving through the process into development and then professional, we've now got a halo on the car with a driver helmet, Whoa. Too. So all the computational fluid dynamics have got to take that into account. You know, the new wing designs, the front and rear wings have been changed at the World Finals just held in Singapore. But having the halo has kind of slowed the cars down, but made them think how to speed the car up with, you know, looking at bearing efficiencies and wheel manufacture.
And you mentioned the size, 20 centimeters. Now, when one sees it, I think it looks like the most glorious and most spectacular Hot Wheels car you could ever see out there. But it's so advanced as well in the aero side of things. Now, what sort of things are they really working on? Because in a car that small, can you really learn to do that much? I mean, there must be so many possibilities, right?
Yeah, I mean, the ones to get to the regional and nationals, you've got to be using computational fluid dynamics to just check the airflow of the car. Obviously, there's rules and regulations which you've got to adhere to. But, you know, the side pods, you know, should they be narrow? Should they be wide? Should they be hollow underneath? Looking at the rules and regulations, you know, what about the ground effect of the car? All of these things are analyzed in CFD, and it's incredible that when they talk to the judges that they know so much. You know, it's just like talking to a Formula One engineer. It's just F1 in schools in miniature.
And a very nerdy question comes up to my mind next. What sort of composites are they using? Is it just like paper? Because these guys are really small, aren't they?
Yeah, it's paper to the age of 11, and then they go into it's called model block. So they machine it out of model block, but then they'll 3D print in various materials. We've even had carbon fiber front and rear wings. Wow. They've got to machine everything on computer aided engineering machinery. So CAD CAM and CNC is a big part of the main body, but in front of the rear wing, the front axle and behind the rear axle, you can 3D print the front and rear wings.
And in terms of costs, Andrew, is it really as grassroots as it looks to be? Because when you talk about grassroots programs in motorsport, with driving, obviously, there's a lot of initial investment you've got to put in to build up your skill. But with you folks, it's all very at the very base level, right? And so are the costs also representative of the same? And how much does a school have to invest to get in a way?
Well, this is it. I mean, F1 in schools, people think, oh, it's going to be too expensive. It's literally £8, $10 to get involved because that's all the cost of the model block. So everything you do from forming a team to putting the project management plan, the business sponsorship, marketing, sketching, designing, analyzing is all for free. Then what you want to manufacture, we have make centers all around the world. In the UK, we've got various ones. Aston University is a classic where they'll take designs from schools. They'll manufacture the car for them. They'll send it back to the school, and that might cost £25. And then they'll put their own 3D printed wings on the cars, which aren't very expensive either. So cost of getting involved, very minimal. You don't need the equipment. It's great if you've got a track at the school so you can test the cars time after time, but it's not essential. So it's affordable from just about any school. So if you've got six kids in the team, it might be a £5 contribution each to get a car to a regional final. Obviously, the school's got to provide the minibus and get the kids there. When you get to the national, you've got 2 days, so you've got overnight accommodation. But, you know, if you're a regional champion, you've got to go to local companies and say, look, can you help us? We need, you know, £250 to get a minibus and teacher support to get to the regional. We might need accommodation. And they go out, and part of their job is to have their team identity with their shirts and looking all the same with sponsor logos, just like Formula One. So, you know, that's part and parcel of Formula One in schools.
That almost sounds wrong, Andrew. Like for a cost that's cheaper than actually watching Formula One for a season, you can get involved in something quite like this. It's kind of mind-blowing to me, the way it works out. And in a way, you guys are enablers, aren't you? Because the learnings that they get, the CFD side and the aero side, it's mostly the stuff that they learn on their own, isn't it?
Yeah, they have to do that. I mean, it's not taught in the classroom. I mean, we had a group of students went to the British High Commissioner in Singapore, went to the residence there, and she was asking them questions. And basically, I said to them, if you had F1 in schools as a subject at school, would you all attend? And they said, absolutely, every day. You know, it's just one of those things that gets them hooked, and they just want to better themselves and improve the, you know, the car manufacturing, the presentations. I mean, the verbal presentations are spectacular. You know, it's 10 minutes long and they all contribute. They've all got confidence. They can all deliver it. And of course, that's assessed by a team of judges.
Wowee. So in a way, we're building up the next set of Toto Wolffs as well with the kind of presentations they have to give in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And all of that is just, I mean, do you see the drive in all the students? Like, where do they learn from? Do they invoke a lot of knowledge from their teachers, from the internet, or do they even come to you for that matter? Because you've got quite the engineering background yourself, in a way.
Yeah, we've got a learning channel so they can go on there and understand what they have to do. They've got to look at the rules and regulations and the judging criteria. That's one of the most important things, to look at what they're going to be judged on. And obviously, with the verbal presentation, there's a criteria that they've got to meet. Put across there, they've all got to contribute, put across how they develop the team, how they develop the team logo, the identity that the team is going to present, how they got their sponsors, how they created the design, and who manufactured the car, where did they source the bearings from, which partners did they work with in industry to help get the cars painted, perhaps. So, yeah, they've got so many things to consider, but it's a full-on commitment. You know, to get to the world finals might take 2 or 3 years. And the teams that attended in Singapore in September clearly spent all summer producing everything that they had to get ready for the event. I mean, the 10-page portfolios are just as good as anything that would be produced in industry. And the judging of that is quite a commitment too. We had 80 judges in Singapore, which is all volunteered, by the way. Yeah.
And what sort of scale are you guys operating on? I mean, how many teams compete on a global level every year?
Yeah, we've got 28,000 schools every year over the time we compete, you know, primary, secondary. We have 60 countries we're operating in, and we have what we call in-country coordinators that make this happen. They put on the events in Malaysia, Singapore, Australia, USA, and they manage the events. We're just halfway through a season of regional finals in Australia. They call them state finals. Mm-hmm. And the winners from there will go to their national final in March next year, just before the Grand Prix. So, the commitment from everybody is off the scale, really. It does need always partners and sponsors to get the cash to put on a regional final. You know, you've got to hire a venue. You've got to put pit displays up for them to decorate because they've got to show off their identity in a pit display. And just food and drink, you know, all costs money. We've got 25 regional finals in the UK, including primary, and big commitment. And we need support from as many organizations as possible to make it happen.
Now, I want to talk about the past examples of the students who have graduated from F1 in schools and gone on to do bigger and better things. I just saw the case study list on the F1 in schools website as well. And clearly so many of them have such great insights. And they've also been working in Formula One. I mean, the biggest example we've got on the website immediately, the one that's most evident, Aina Azizi from Malaysia, working as an aero intern at Mercedes. She must be one of thousands, right? You guys have developed and gotten into Formula One?
Yeah, we have got an enormous amount of alumni that are working in F1, but not just F1, Airbus, BA Systems, Jaguar Land Rover, Mercedes, you know, they literally using F1 in schools to give them all the background knowledge and I suppose experience to apply for jobs and you know, give them that opportunity to go for the high rise jobs. So, you know, we've got George Britton. He's just left Williams. He was in the Williams Academy in 2015, became world champion, three Americans, three Germans, and he got a job, as did his brother at Williams. And Williams recruited the best 10 from our four world finals from 2015 to 2019 before COVID hit. But, you know, Formula One teams will tell you that if you put F1 in schools on your CV, you'll get to the next stage before they look at, you know, at final interviews. So, you know, it really does open doors for the students.
And in terms of the partnership with Formula One, do the team specifically support you folks as well? And does F1 do their part as well in building it up? Because surely this sort of ladder is something that's in the best interest of everyone in the sport, right?
Yeah, Formula One are fabulous. They obviously, back in 2005, with Bernie Eccleston gave us the logo, which obviously is a new logo now. Formula One help us immensely with obviously things that we do. I mean, we've got students that will be attending the Grand Prix in Las Vegas. USA champions will be there. World finals, we get the world champions on the podium with Stefano Domenicali presenting the world champions trophy. All the Formula One team supporters give us their logo, give us their body shells for primary. They give us goodie bags and trophies at the world finals and send a senior team principal or a senior race engineer to the event to present their trophies. And then they get garage tours and factory tours. Wow. And obviously, you know, a first step, if you like, into, maybe an open day or maybe a work placement. So they've got so many opportunities, our students, after doing F1 in schools.
Wait, and can they ask some really stupid questions to the engineers? Because that's where the learnings really come from.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the Williams Academy, they had a mentor. So they kind of worked with the mentor, week in, week out to make sure they were learning all the time as they were going through the process.
Wowee. And how much do you guys support them after F1 schools? Is there like a program of sorts where you can also check back in on their career? Like, hey, are you guys doing well? Or is there something that you guys can support them on? Because surely, if one engineer does well, I think that inspires 15, 20 engineers around them to probably get in there as well.
Yeah. I mean, we've got an alumni group. We keep building that. But we also link the F1 school students, the alumni, to the Formula One heads of HR so that, you know, they're all looking for jobs. They want to know how to connect, how to engage with people. So that's what we do. That's for us one of the biggest thrills. If we can get them engaged with Formula One teams and get jobs in F1, we know it works. And the Formula One teams know that too as well.
Andrew, I want to talk about some past stories from F1 in schools. Have there been any particular group of students that have really blown your mind with what they've come up with? Surely, right? There must be, because there are so many students every year that there must be so many different ideas every year as well in terms of the cars that they've made.
Yeah, there's no bounds to testing them. You know, we changed the regulations. We had a nose cone challenge. They changed the nose cone in 1.8 seconds, I think it was, in Singapore. It's not a marked test. It's just a bit of fun. But just to think that we threw that at them and they did it. But, you know, sustainability is a big part of Formula One in schools. So that we give them a chance to explain their sustainability process and what they've thought about and how to, you know, promote sustainability through their F1 in schools challenge. So we had a team this year that, you know, when you machine the model block, there's dust that comes off that. They gather the dust and they gave it to mealworms. Another team had a pit display that when they returned it back to the school, it turned into furniture. They're thinking, I mean, they never stop amazing us with things that they come up with. It's just for them, it's a mission to help them all get big and better opportunities in life.
Oh, it's quite the platform in a way for you can definitely do in the future all the way through. And I also want to discuss how it's been growing, because obviously we're now seeing Formula One become a bigger sport in a way, at least commercially. More people are interested than ever before, and it helps to have more marketing around it. But the engineering side, has there been a constant flow and demand of engineers all the way through? Because I've noticed that, at least in India, after Drive to Survive came in, there are more people willing to go in the engineering side as well. I mean, there have been motorsport academies popping up, and students, as early as in grade 11 or grade 12, they really want to learn how they can get in. Have you also witnessed something similar in the last few years?
Yeah, there's a huge amount of interest in F1 in schools, and you know, so many teams want to come to the world finals. I mean, we can only put on so many spaces and make them available. I mean, we had 68, which is a record for us in Singapore, 28 countries. If we carry on growing like that, A, we're not going to find the space that's affordable. An accommodation, you know, next to a Grand Prix weekend, it's expensive. So we've got to try and work out how we can make it affordable, how we can keep growing it. And one of the things we're looking at now is doing regional events. So, you know, maybe an Asia Cup, America's Cup, perhaps one in the Middle East, and allow students to travel, which is what a lot of schools want to do. Maybe not at the world finals level, but, you know, at least competing with 30, 40 different teams around their region so they can have that experience and become, you know, Asia Cup champions, which is not like the world champions, but it's still a good 3 or 4 days out of school having fun.
Hey, also on that, I've noticed at these engineering events, right, I've also witnessed a couple of them in person, but the camaraderie between the students is quite something. I mean, normally in a competition like this, I expected them to be very tight-lipped, like not sharing anything about their designs or their structure or what they've learned. But I was amazed to see that the students are generally very open. Have you also witnessed that in F1 in schools?
Yeah, I mean, the pit displays, you know, there's 68 displays in Singapore. They're all looking at where they are, you know, how close to the entrance, you know, how close to the stage. And then they look around and see who's next to them. And you know what? They help each other put the pit displays up. They talk about the things that they've done with their car design, and they're all thinking and learning about what they can do if they need to come back next year and compete. So it's just fantastic to think that they all come together. You know, 400 students in Singapore have the best time of their lives. They meet friends that will last forever. I mean, they're all in the pool having a great time when there's downtime. There's an after party at the end of the 8-day process, and that is incredible to see them all. And you know, I think we've got girlfriends and boyfriends over the years that are hopefully still together for 23 years on. Maybe some have got married, but it's a great team atmosphere.
That's more like it. And I'm so amazed that you guys are able to take you to so many countries. 23 to be precise, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh. Well, 23 years. We just had our 18th World Finals. We have to look at a period of you know, in the calendar year from September to the end of November where we can host the World Finals. And as you know, Formula One's growing, demand's growing, costs are going up. So we've got to look at where is it affordable? You know, where can students afford to stay for the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, where our event is before the Grand Prix weekend. But then if they want to stay for the race, where are they going to stay? Because it's, you know, prices quadruple. over the weekend, and it is difficult for them to afford those costs. So we're always looking, having that in mind. But that's the popularity of Formula One. Drive to Survive's had a big impact on that. But it's made it more popular to do F1 in schools, which is good for us.
And also, what sort of countries are competing? I've heard India, I know there's a personal bias when I bring it up, but I've heard that lots of Indian schools are also going up there. And there's like many hundreds and thousands of students, including, in fact, one of my aunts. I remember her putting out a Facebook post when I was 8 years old saying, hey, we've got F1 in schools in our school. And they were just so proud about it. But India being one, what other major countries are genuinely very, very involved in F1 in schools largely?
Yeah, there's thousands of schools in India now doing it, which is fantastic. Obviously, COVID had an effect globally, but they're all bouncing back. So, obviously, China's a big country for us. They've not had a Grand Prix for five years. They'll be coming up next year. So, you name it, we've got it involved in most countries. We've got Chile and Colombia just joining next year. Costa Rica, so countries that you wouldn't expect are coming on board. Obviously, North America is a big market for Formula One and for F1 in schools. So we just got to keep adding more and more countries. And, if we could travel around the world to help create and develop more countries, that we would do. But they keep coming to us and say, how do we get involved? One of the countries we'd really like to get engaged more is Holland because of Max Verstappen. But it's how many hours of the day have we got and how many days in the week have we got to go out and meet these people to get the process started. They do come to us, and it's quite an interesting exercise to get registered as an F1 in schools in country coordinator. But once you start, the kids just love it. They can't get enough of it.
Hang on. So has there been more growth in America as well in the last few years? Because I'm sure the popularity must have skyrocketed after the enormous marketing effort that's gone behind, no?
Yeah, there's a lot of interest now. COVID had a real slowdown on things in North America, but we're getting back on track now. We're having a national final next year, but we've had a presence in Austin, in Miami, and we've got teams going into Las Vegas to have a look at F1 in schools. We're at Autodesk University, which is taking place 3 days before, where our USA national champions will be exhibiting what they did in Singapore. North America is about to explode.
And Andrew, I have a question on the current happenings of Formula One. Now, we've just heard that the FIA has allowed an 11th team to come into Formula One, but Formula One really aren't very keen about it. But it would ideally be better for everyone, right? If we had more teams, more engineers having spaces. Is that something that you folks are a little vocal about? Because ideally, I know the end goal isn't just Formula One, but wouldn't it be great to have more spaces on the grid for more engineers as well to develop more cars?
Well, an 11th team is fine with us. I guess there's a limit to how many they can accommodate at a Grand Prix circuit. I know the 11th team has actually taken on one of our alumni that has just graduated, which is fantastic. Uh-huh. He just sent us an email a couple of weeks ago saying I've been hired, even though it's not actually set in stone yet that they've got that 11th place, but they've got to start recruiting. If you look at how many people in a factory, Mercedes, they must have over 1,000 people. So they want to recruit. They need the best engineers. We've got well over a handful of engineers that in Mercedes, a high performance engine or the F1 factory. And the same will apply in a lot of the Formula One teams too. So yeah, bring it on. If America's got a factory there that needs engineers, we've got a pipeline. We can supply them.
Love it. And the one last thing I really wanted to ask to you, Andrew, was about other teams as well. Is there like a direct structure of sorts? And are you guys often in contact with Formula One teams like Mercedes to create that pipeline in a way? And are you constantly like in touch to try to make sure that your students are also getting in there?
Yeah, we are. In fact, the last 2 weeks, we've had Aston Martin, Williams, McLaren having discussions with their HR people about our students that want to come in and how can we get them into the factory. They're as keen as we are to recruit the best. So we're doing that for them. So we're sifting through all the applications. Imagine they put a job on for an apprentice engineer. They get inundated, but we can provide them with the cream of the crop so they can take the best, which they never struggle to do, of course. And that applies not just across apprenticeships, but at a degree level. Students have done F1 in schools. They've got that practical experience. So they're ready to just jump straight into a Formula One factory and take on, a role of just like George Britton did of race engineer.
Okay, wait, one more question's popped up in my mind. What's in it for you guys? Like, why did you even begin in the first place? And I'm talking about you on a personal level, Andrew, because the initiative broadly sounds great, but when did you get the idea to begin F1 at schools initially?
Well, going back to 2000, free 3D software was made available to all schools. So I worked with the Department for Education to make sure that software was not too daunting for school children. In fact, it wasn't. It was fine. It was the teachers that needed training. So then we helped train the teachers. But F1 in schools is not for profit. So on the for-profit side of our business, we had the machines that manufacture the cars and the racetracks. We build those to supply to schools. So obviously we needed that to be successful to fund F1 in schools. So that's why we started it initially, to help try and sell more CNC routers. But since then, it's grown into two separate entities. So F1 in schools is a ring fence, not for profit. And then the manufacturing side of the cars, the tracks, the consumables, smoke tunnels, those are what the schools need. So it's just like Mercedes do Formula One, but they obviously sell road cars. You know, the two go hand in glove, don't they? So it's the same kind of thing. So that's what drove us, because we could see so many schools around the world taking on the free 3D software opportunity to design anything in 3D. So designing a phone case or a camera or whatever it might be in 3D sounds great. But if you had a product that you could actually compete and race against other schools, F1 in schools was born from that very concept.
And what's the next logical step for you folks? Where do you go from here? More countries, as you mentioned, sounds like a very tricky idea. But what could be the next big step for you guys?
Well, I mean, people keep saying, you know, you could make an oval track, you could have, chicanes. At the end of the day, every year, more and more students get involved with F1 in schools because they just love the whole concept of all the disciplines that we teach. But racing down a 20-meter track as fast as possible, trying to break the 1 second barrier every year, which is what they try to do, is a challenge for every school and every student in the world that wants to do it. They move on then to other careers and education and maybe form a student at university. But why fix what isn't broken? Why challenge them to do more when they don't want to do more? They want to learn all the skill sets that F1 in schools gives them. And then from there on, they can go into other career opportunities. So what we want to do is give more and more schools all around the world that opportunity. So more and more countries is what we strive to achieve, and more regional finals like the Asia Cup, America's Cup, or whatever you might call it. So school students can travel, meet other school students from different parts of the world, create friendships and learn from those friendships, and also then get all the skills that they need to get on in life and enter jobs that obviously they're keen to get involved in.
And fingers crossed you guys succeed on that journey as well over the years with time to come. But Andrew, it's been amazing to speak to you over the course of the last few minutes. Thank you for taking out your time and being on the Inside Line F1 podcast.
No problem. It's been a pleasure. And please keep in touch and hope it goes well.
Absolutely. And folks, if in case you do want to keep in touch with F1 in Schools, please do check out their podcast as well. It's called The Main Straight, and you can get to know a lot more about how it works, how you can learn to be someone competing in F1 in Schools, and also the broader benefit of having this as well. But generally, thank you. Thank you for your time, Andrew, and we shall see you very, very shortly. Folks, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for listening, folks. We'll be back on the Inside Line F1 podcast very, very shortly. Keep subscribing, keep listening to the Inside Line F1 podcast. We'll be here rather soon. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. Before we ended, I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Amazon Music once again for partnering with us on this episode of the podcast.